Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for coming today. It is now 10:02 a.m. on October 30th, 2019, and in accordance with a public notice issued by the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources, the department hereby opens the public hearing on the proposed 225 CMR 21 Clean Peak Energy Portfolio Standard, or Clean Peak Regulations. This is the third of three public hearings that the department will conduct on the Clean Peak Regulations. As stated in the public notice, the proposed Clean Peak Regulations address policy requirements pursuant to Chapter 227 of the Acts of 2018, now codified as Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 25A, Section 11F. The purpose of this public hearing is to receive verbal and written testimony on the proposed Clean Peak Regulations. As indicated in the public notice, written testimony will be accepted until 5 p.m. on today, October 30th, 2019, for the proposed Clean Peak Regulations. This public hearing is being recorded and will be posted to the department's website. The department requests that, to the extent possible, parties also submit written comments of their testimony. And if you do testify today, if you could speak up so we can make sure that the recorder can hear you, that would be great. I'd also like to emphasize that we are here today to receive any and all input on the proposed regulations. DOER staff will not be responding to any questions at this hearing. If interested parties do have requests for clarification or potential changes that they would like to see, they can note those requests either today or in writing, and DOER will ensure that they will be considered. Are there any elected officials present today who would like to speak out of order? I do not see any hands raised. So we will proceed with comments in the order that people signed in on the sign-in sheet.
Great, thank you for coming. Jeffrey Quackenbush, please.
So I had three items. Can you hear me? I'm losing my voice a little bit.
Yes.
One is that we are concerned, I work for Integrated Storage Technologies. We're a battery, stationary battery developer that works in New England and New York. We're concerned that the Clean Peak credits be high enough over the term that we would be developing a project so that the project, we can ensure that the project is, you know, financially viable. If we think that possibly there's going to be a bunch of people coming onto the market and that, the cost for the credits will crash in like 2 or 3 years, you know, it could make a lot of these projects that seem viable initially and that millions of dollars were spent on be not viable in the future. So in order to encourage developers to have confidence in the market, we're wondering if there's going to be some kind of target price or a floor price or some other kind of mechanism to make sure that the value of the credits doesn't crash or otherwise make the projects not have at least some kind of minimum revenue over, a term, a reasonable term. A lot of these battery systems are warranted for 10 years, so, a 10-year term, but maybe less, would seem to be a good kind of time frame to shoot for. So that's the first point. Is that clear?
Yes.
Second one is, it's not clear to us in the documentation whether systems interconnected to ISO New England will qualify, or if it's only systems that are utility connected under some tariff. So we'd like some clarification there. Obviously, we'd also like to be able to have the option of doing bulk market connections. The third item is it's not clear if there's a cap on the number of credits a particular system can earn. So it would be nice if that was clarified one way or the other. Again, we would prefer there not be a cap because we want to, get as much value out of the asset as possible for whatever the term of the of its lifetime is.
Thank you. Up next, we have Brandon Kibb.
Good morning, Brandon Kibbe, Great River Hydro. Principal concern with the draft regulation, and we understand there's a statutory restriction as well related to this, is the ability for existing RPS resources to contractually pair with qualified qualified energy storage systems. We understand that qualified energy storage systems can contractually pair with RPS resources, but that is not afforded reciprocally to existing RPS, and we understand there's a statutory restriction on that. But what we would like to see is we would like to see some flexibility built into the regulations that would provide for a statutory fix to that. Some of the outreach we've conducted with legislators to date has indicated that the statutory language is something of a figment of the drafting and wasn't necessarily driven by a particular issue. And so we would seek a legislative fix to that potentially. And hopefully the regulations will be drafted in such a way that there's flexibility built in that would allow for that. The primary reason, of course, is economy of scale. Hydropower's projects, particularly through, we're a member of Bay State Hydropower Association, for instance, and we would like to be able to pool our resources and contractually pair with an energy storage system that would provide a substantial amount of storage to the system rather than building, build one 20 megawatt system rather than 20 1 megawatt systems co-located across the countryside. That co-location requirement in the legislation and in the regulation is a major hindrance to that potential. A second is the 10% 0.1% or 0.1 multiplier that is applied to existing resources. If one of the objectives in the regulations and in the enabling statute is to provide energy storage to offset the impact that renewable resources are creating on the supply side of things, we certainly believe there should not necessarily be a impedance on existing resources to participate in those in that opportunity. Obviously, we can fix this problem quicker if we utilize existing resources and are able to utilize them in a way and incent them to participate in a way that is allows them to join in the marketplace. We strongly feel that that multiplier makes a great deal of sense for state contracted resources and resources that are otherwise subsidized by the state, but not all existing resources are subsidized by the state. Hydro is a great example of that. And I think that's the bulk of my comments.
Thank you. Next we have Carter Wall.
Hi, thank you. I've got I think it's just a couple of questions. I know you're not going to be answering questions, but so let's say seeking clarification when the regs come out on these. The first one has to do with the interaction between the co-location requirement under the definition of qualified RPS resources and the definition of contractual pairing under the qualified energy storage systems. This may be a stupid question that we're just like missing something, but the way my colleagues and I have read this is that co-location is required to become an existing qualified RPS resource. And so that means that contractual pairing with a qualified existing RPS resource would actually have to be co-located. So that contractual pairing with an existing resource is not, something that could actually happen. So we just wanted to, clarify that is in fact the case. That's kind of the way we read it, but it doesn't sort of make any sense, so we just kind of wanted to see if we thought that you were fixing the co-location thing, but it doesn't seem like it's fixed for existing resources. Does that make sense? Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, great. Thank you.
Got it.
The The other thing that I wanted to ask about is the existing or contracted resource multiplier applies to existing or contracted resources, obviously, which are defined as being either storage or generation. We were wondering if you meant that to apply to existing storage. In other words, if someone has existing storage and they want to build new non-existing generation resources, does that multiplier still apply? I know that there aren't too many cases of that where the storage pre-exists the generation. But in fact, First Light Power, where I work, we've built a couple of large battery storage facilities on university campuses, and there's two problems. One is they'd really like to participate, have those participate. They can't co-locate them as this is currently written for those two reasons, because of the co-location thing and because of it's existing, because storage is also defined as being an existing or contracted resource. Does that make sense? I'm sorry, I'm not putting this very clearly. Okay, those are my two sort of clarification requests.
Thank you.
Okay, up next, see if I can read the handwriting here. Janine Kahlo?
Janine.
Okay.
Hi, I came to this expecting there'd be a presentation, so I'm just a member of the public, and I don't understand anything about what the Clean Peak Standard means. But what I am concerned about is that biomass and burning garbage is being incentivized equally with solar and wind in the state. I understand also that our RPS is very dirty in Massachusetts. It's not a clean, we don't have a clean renewable mix. And maybe I'm wrong on this, but that's just what my understanding is. My concerns relate to any kind of carbon emitting clean standard, because we can't afford to put any more carbon in the atmosphere. We need to sequestrate, we need to pull it out. And it's just not acceptable to call anything that's net carbon emitting clean. I think to incentivize that goes against our ability to build a future we need for our children and the planet we need to leave for them. I also don't know if and when our utilities are going to incentivize nighttime storage and nighttime peak, avoiding peak, getting people aware of peak. So my concern with this entire process is that the public understand nil. They have no idea where their energy comes from. They have no idea what's going on with climate. They have no idea what you all do. And I think our state really disserves the public by not engaging in stakeholder level education, engagement, and forward thinking. How do we get in 10 years to where we need to get to save this planet? So this whole process has me concerned for our future in that we're not getting anywhere with our communities. And this needs to happen at the community level. People should be here. People should be learning about what you're talking about today. And there should be forums where people are invited to learn about that, and then to go speak to their elected representatives about it. Instead, it's all being done by the industry, by the overseers of this. But public engagement is completely lacking. And we have no chance of beating the greatest existential threat of our time without public engagement, because everyone has to understand what you guys are doing. That's basically my point, and I thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Up next, we have Russ Aney.
Thank you. So I have a number of comments to make, and I'll try to follow them up at the end of the day with written comments. I think the DOER has demonstrated a lack of learning regarding what happened with SREC 1 with the single price for the CPEX. The problem with SREC 1 was it tended to overcompensate, providing too much incentive to large projects that had a low per unit cost of development, and potentially not compensating enough the smallest projects. For reasons of simplicity, I believe, the Clean Peak Standard has chosen a single price for all CPECs. And that has will have a dramatic effect on which types of storage projects get developed here in Massachusetts, because there are significant, even more so than on the PV side, economies of scale associated with developing large storage projects versus small ones. And there are different benefits associated with each. For example, if I have a large storage project that is co-located within a stone's distance of a substation, it lends itself to a certain type of operation and certain grid benefits, versus if I have one that's behind the meter that provides resiliency benefits, which you do, you know, additionally compensate for, but provides additional, you know, benefits for the grid and for everything interconnected to that grid. So I think it was a mistake not for the program not to have multipliers that better reflect the incentive levels required for different size and types of systems. And I highly encourage you to review and update the regulations to accommodate that. Specifically for small, there is a dramatic shortfall in terms of the value of a clean peak incentive versus what's required to induce development of storage. In the presentation a few weeks ago, you shared that you looked at this program independently of the Connected Solutions program, but you did consider the smart storage adder incentive when trying to figure out whether you would stimulate the required investment given the proposed CPEC levels. I would suggest that the analysis for small was not adequate because the amount that is being offered is significantly less than what's required, just given the absolute CPEC levels and considering the economies of scale of large versus small storage projects, whether measured on a capacity, a kilowatt output basis, or in terms of a storage duration perspective. Okay, so that is significantly, it's a significant fatal problem or fundamental problem associated with project for smaller behind the meter storage projects, even with resiliency multiplier. In the statute, there is a definition regarding the clean peak window. It says, rather, it's for seasonal peak standard or periods, and it says it's the daily window during any of the four annual seasons when the net demand of electricity is the highest, provided, however, that a seasonal peak period shall not be less than 1 hour, not longer than four, as determined by the department. So the department has taken some license to define seasons the way they felt was most appropriate, and I applaud them for doing that. They also chose to define what daily means in a certain way, specifically that it would be business days, not holidays, not weekend days. It suggests to me that if the department wanted to, you could further refine the definition of daily to not necessarily be every business day during the year. You are suggesting that somebody's going to have to, or potentially, to maximize the value of their CPEC generation, if you will, exercise their battery nearly 200 times a year to 250 times per year to participate in every daily opportunity to generate CPECs. Much more than is needed to adequately suppress the peak demands on the grid, because many of those days will not be days of above average demand on the grid when the discharging of the batteries during those peak windows provide absolutely no value to the grid at all. And that on the other hand, it will significantly affect the wear and tear or the degradation of the capacity of those batteries. Batteries degrade much faster, both in terms of their output capacity and their duration, based on cycling, infrequent cycling, than, for example, distributed generation does. So whereas you might see like a 0.5% per year degradation in the output of a solar panel, you will see closer to a 5% annual degradation if these batteries are exercised so intensively. And that significantly reduces their potential output over 10 years. In addition, many of the customers for the behind-the-meter market are hoping to use their primary use case for a lot of them, especially residential, is as a resilient or a backup power supply. It is hard to sell the clean peak incentive as an incentive at all if I'm telling somebody that their battery is going to get drained every day, so that by the end of the day, especially for the overnight hours, they're unlikely to have much or if any capacity. Sure, they can set up some reserve capacity, but it becomes challenging to say that this is an incentive that is something they're going to find of great value if it requires them to exercise their battery so intensively every day of the week for an entire year. So I would suggest that the department reconsider every business day as an appropriate measure for meeting that statutory definition given the license it's shown. I believe you could use something else that is more variable based on whether we expect we're going to see above average grid demand on any given day. And that's something closer to even 100 times would be much better for the owners of these batteries while still providing essentially the same benefit to all ratepayers in terms of the grid. Okay. One other aspect of that daily window where kind of the way the incentive is set up is that DOER is trying to encourage people to chase the monthly peak to get that 15 times multiplier. They're asked to actually chase that peak regardless of whether it occurs within the seasonal window. So people, I mean, one of the beauties of this program was almost like it's set and forget nature, right? So I think that was initially one of the things that I found attractive, that you could set the for various times of the year seasonal discharge profiles so the battery would discharge during those periods of time. Having this chase the peak requirement to get that 15x multiplier, which is worth something to folks, makes them potentially discharge the battery outside of those peak windows altogether. However, you never know in the beginning of a month if that day is going to be that monthly peak. What if they, you know, discharge during something outside of a window, say the window, the monthly peak in July is projected to be on November 5th at 2:00 in the afternoon outside the seasonal window. But the actual one happens on July 28th, and instead they shot their wad, if you will, they discharge all their capacity on that early day in July. They'll get absolutely no credit for discharging it, even though it probably was useful, even though it would have been useful during the seasonal hour. By making them chase this around, there's a potential of getting no incentive for the discharging of battery, even though they are providing good incentive. I also did an analysis of the 2018 ISO New England peak load days and hours. And it turns out that you did an excellent job defining those peak window hours and that you captured every single peak hour for each month within the seasonal windows that were defined for 2018. So I don't think there's a risk to say that instead of using the absolute hour regardless of when it occurs in the day, to redefine that to be the peak hour within the seasonal hours so that potentially if a battery had limited capacity so it didn't have the duration, it wasn't able to provide output at the maximum rate for a full 4 hours, they could potentially tune the discharging to focus on those hours within the seasonal peak windows. For a lot of resiliency solutions, at least in current pricing, that would be useful because most of them will only have a 2 to 3 hour duration capability at maximum. And so they could focus on those. And I think that would be an improvement to the design rather than creating this risk that somebody gets compensated nothing while trying to chase a peak outside of the seasonal window. Another thing that I found unfortunate was that the Department of Energy Resources self-imposed a cost limit to the program that's not in the statute, and it is based on, again, kind of like the utility accounting for net metering, cost without full consideration of all ratepayer benefits that the DOER even considers itself in terms of the value of discharging storage during peak periods of time. So there's this artificial limit of a half a cent per kilowatt hour that shows up explicitly, and I think this is where the sensitivity is, in the supply cost of energy. Just like the RPS does today, if you were to unbundle that, most people have no idea what's within the basic service charge, but currently the RPS costs 2 cents, maybe even a little bit more per kilowatt hour for those certificates. And I think that sensitivity led DOER to establish this half a cent, I think it is, per kilowatt hour limit in terms of what the gross cost of this program could be. in terms of what is paid out in terms of CPECs, or what the utilities, or rather the power suppliers, must pay for CPECs as a as an overall percentage of their cost of energy supply. But a couple columns over in the presentation, I think the DOER can show, if you were to fully add up the expected benefits as articulated in the excellent state of charge report, the actual ratepayer benefit is positive, not negative, even after considering startup charges. So I think that constraint perhaps might also have affected whether the idea of $30 was an appropriate price or not. It certainly looked that way when looking at the consultant's report, that there was an iteration to determine, do we stay within certain cost thresholds, and also incentivize enough storage development based on formulas that were a little hard, frankly, to untangle. And I think that if you remove that constraint of a half cent per kilowatt hour, you may find some additional opportunity or flexibility to compensate, especially smaller storage systems, perhaps a little bit more handsomely than is being proposed, at 30 cents, at you know, essentially 3 cents per kilowatt hour for the CPECs. The other thing is that, again, the absolute threshold or alternative compliance price of $30 is too low for small storage to motivate investment in this. It's not just that they're faced with the same price as any other storage, but they're also faced with a maximum price that is insufficient. And nobody expects that maximum price is going to be maintained for a long period of time. If anything, we're going to see, unfortunately, just like with SREC 1, the price ping off the ceiling because of the cluster studies and other issues that are holding back the development of large PV, as well as the development of retrofits of storage on large PV throughout the state. And there's going to, therefore, probably be a shortage for the first several years until that slog of PV development can actually make it through the cluster studies and get brought online with storage, assuming we figure out the right regulatory process of the DPU for adding storage into those projects. And when that happens, there will be a tidal wave of storage, because storage is moving at even a faster pace than PV has. PV technology and cost improvements have. So while we'll see a trickle of stuff come through on the behind the meter market to the degree the utilities allow us to slip it through while their circuits are saturated, we'll see some come in and they'll get compensated handsomely, relatively, at the ACP price for the next couple of years until this other stuff comes on board and it's going to crash. And so as you've probably heard from others, you're going to find a market that can't be financed. The price for the clean peak energy certificates is way too dynamic, unknown, and volatile for it to be bankable. It is fundamentally not worthwhile to somebody who is trying to invest in storage as an incentive program, even as a marginal incentive program. Right now, my customers look at the Smart Energy Storage Adder. They look at the Connected Solutions Program, which, knock on wood, will come on board as a full-fledged program and actually offer five-year contracts in 2020 when the DPU approves the transition of the program from a demonstration program into a full-fledged program, which it is not right now. And when they do that, those programs, plus what remains of the ITC, is probably enough to encourage some folks with clean peak as gravy on top. But it's something that I cannot, as an installer, as an expert advisor for people considering investments in storage and distributed generation with storage, put much value to at all. Or if we have to put a value to it, we have to further discount what is already a low alternative compliance price to a rate that is probably 10 to 25% of that nominal value for consideration as anything. And really, we pretty much zero it out in terms of full consideration. It would be much more valuable if there was a firmer, fairer price that was adjusted based on the size and the economies of scale associated with the storage systems. And I think it would save ratepayers money in terms of doing that. Another thing that I would argue is that the Clean Peak Incentive Program is very difficult to model, and DOER must come out with tools that make it easier, especially for small system developers and installers, to model both AC coupled as well as DC coupled. DC coupled is particularly hard because it requires you for every hour of the year to maintain essentially an analysis of the state of charge of the battery under various conditions. and most of the current online modeling tools do not do that accurately for areas where there is likelihood of snow cover, which we have here in New England. Most of the tools, PB Watts, Aurora, other tools that developers typically use, whether they know it or not, to model the loss of snow cover, do it on a linear average basis, which is insufficient for actually looking at what the state of charge is on a battery. There are some ways of doing it. It's complicated. It's hard. Most people don't do it. And so there's going to be a lot of problems doing that. And I encourage the DUER to make a tool set available that makes that easy for people to estimate at least the number of CPECs that somebody might get, assuming some basic, you know, parameters for a behind-the-meter storage system. There is an ability to qualify a storage system for when it's co-located with an existing RPS system as a retrofit. There is no requirement to necessarily match the two of those things up in terms of their capacity. So somebody with a 1 kilowatt PV system could install a 5 megawatt battery under the current regulations and qualify that. That does not seem to be the intention of the regulations. I ask you to review that. The most significant amount of storage beyond large development that is likely to get added to the grid over the next 5 years are through electric vehicles that are able to interactively work with the grid. But that doesn't seem to be explicitly addressed here. And I would create some type of structure to accommodate that as that becomes more realizable. I think that will come within the next couple of years. Even though we don't have much in the way of bi-directional vehicle-to-grid charging right now, I think you will see that. And this is kind of moot us to how that will work. I think that's all I have for today. I'll put most of that into comments that I'll submit this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Betty Chan Massey.
Yeah, I'm from NC. Really just want to listen to some of this questions and also really continue to learn because I work with developers. Concerns that were raised. Actually, the first gentleman's first question actually addressed some of my from the financial and long-term viability perspective. How's our developer asking us for storage and systems and really warranty for 10 years and it's just really a education for me personally to better understand how they actually it would make money for those type of durations that were set forth in the company standard. So thanks for asking that first question.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So as of now, I'm done reading the names off the list. Is there anyone else here who would like to speak?
All right. Well.
Can I ask a question? Is it possible to get the public comment period extended for people who are interested in knowing more about this?
I can add that to your comment if you'd like.
I know yep. It ends today. It's kind of a steep learning curve to when you didn't know this was coming, to suddenly have to educate yourself and be ready to hear comments from the public's perspective.
May I ask, how do you even hear about today's events? If you look up,
it just came across my radar. I don't even know. I look for opportunities to engage in clean energy promotion, and this is just an opportunity I learned about through that. But I understand a lot is happening at the state level with the change in the renewable portfolio standard incentives to extend them to biomass and garbage burn. I know that's underway. I know that a whole lot of things are underway administratively. The problem is it's not happening legislatively, and so the public have absolutely no consciousness of it. If none of this stuff gets reported in the press, in terms of what's in play in a way that people can even start to dive into and understand what our options are and what's best for us. And to the last gentleman's comment about the EV storage being the largest part of our potential storage, that's consumer based, that's individual based, that's those of us who have EVs have that potential. If we're part of this new system, we should understand what that system is. And it has to be distilled down, it has to be presented in public forums, in ways that we need our ability as the people who this affects the consumer of the electricity as well as the mm-hmm. citizen on this planet can understand and can buy into and feel like we've got some skating.
Thank you.
So if we could extend that period, I think that would just show that kind of willingness to perhaps engage further, engage deeper, you know, send out some press releases, get it on the public's radar, what our possibilities are.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak?
All right, so it is 10:37. I will close the public hearing at this time. Department staff will be here until noon, so if anybody else does arrive and would like to provide comments, we will be here until noon. But as of right now, the hearing will end, and everyone, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.